Welcome back to Word on the Hills with me, Gwyn Cheltimer, and my co-host, Felicity Signal-Reed, and our guest today, Heidi Kroot. Heidi, you've recently returned from a writing retreat in Portugal. How did you come to go there, and was it a retreat for creative nonfiction?
Well, it was the fourth freefall writing workshop I've attended. I was turned on to freefall writing when the leader, Barbara Turner-Vesalago, spoke at the Writers' Community of Durham Region breakfast a couple of years ago. She delivers freefall workshops all over the world, Canada, the U.S., the U.K., Bali, Australia, and this year, for the first time, it was in Portugal. People come from all over the world to attend her workshops. And you can use her method for any kind of writing to answer your question. It can be for fiction, creative nonfiction, poetry, personal essays, what have you. So I attended two freefall workshops in Hockley Valley last winter and the winter before, and I actually hosted a freefall workshop in my own home last June. And when Portugal came up, it was just too enticing to miss. So I went with two friends that I'd met at Hockley Valley. We met six other writers there from all over Europe. And it was a beautiful time to go. April wildflowers, groves of ancient cork trees. We stayed in a beautiful place called Monte Rosa Guest House in the Algarve. It was just wonderful.
Oh, it does sound like I envy you, that's for sure. So what is it about the freefall writing process that draws you?
Well, Barbara wrote a wonderful book about it. She's called it The Art of Freefall, Writing Without a Parachute. And she teaches from it her five rules, or precepts, as she calls them. I guess it's five different kinds of dots that need to be connected.
You can't get away from
no,
the five dots.
The dots are everywhere. The first precept is to sit down at the keyboard or with a notebook with an absolutely blank mind. You just write what comes up, and something miraculously always does come up. Our minds and our unconscious lead a very rich and colorful life if we could only just set them free. And the second precept is to write without correcting or editing. She does not want anyone to entertain, even for a moment, your inner critic. The third is to give all the sensuous detail, and I find this the most powerful precept of all because it plunges you into the scene in a very visceral way. The fourth is to go fearward. She says if there's something you're resisting or something you're afraid to face, write about that because it's guaranteed to just be teeming with energy. And the fifth, she says if you're writing autobiographical material, let the memories compost for at least 10 years before you tackle them. They need that time to settle down and take form. So the way it works at a freefall workshop, we spend the morning writing in silence. There's absolutely no talking. I love that. We conserve our energy for the writing. And at 12:45 p.m., we print our piece that we've come up with that morning, and we hand it in to Barbara. After lunch, she wants us to get exercise, so we walk or we swim or we snowshoe, depending on the season or the venue. And sometimes there's a little bit of extra time for more writing or a nap. And then we convene as a group around 4 o'clock or 4:30 in the afternoon, and Barbara, with her beautiful voice, reads five or six pieces aloud, anonymously, and we all discuss it. We talk about what has energy, what works, what we loved, what were the mysteries, what were the puzzles, what were the surprises. And the author, of course, doesn't talk. The author, he or she just listens and absorbs. And at the end of that group session, Barbara returns our printed pieces to each of us. She has a unique way of marking them up to show what works especially well. And she includes a paragraph or a page of her observations. And so we learn from that and we learn from one another. It's a truly wonderful experience. It's very creative, very supportive, and very inspiring.
Oh, sounds like it.
And I finally started doing freefall properly in Portugal. Until then, I didn't want to give up control. I was always arriving at the page with an idea preconceived. But yeah,
it does take practice, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Well, having heard about the process, would you like to read us a freefall piece?
Sure. This was the first freefall piece I actually did properly in Portugal. And I'll just read it to you the way it came out that day. I always preface it, by the way, with out of the mists comes what? And so out of the mist comes what? A little boy, maybe 8 years old, with a red knapsack on his back, not an old-fashioned bag the shape of an oriole's nest tied to a long stick over his shoulder, but a modern knapsack with a weave of lime-green elastic on the back into which he has threaded a jacket, one arm of which taps on his heels as he walks, and a snarl of straps in different lengths thrashing with every step like the hair of Medusa. Danny is running away. He is about 20 minutes from his home as he makes his way down the highway, mindful that he has only an hour or so before his dad comes looking for him, and mindful, too, of the transport trucks that blast past him. He looks down as he goes, watches his sneakers and how they make slow but inexorable progress on the gravel shoulder, leaving no trace, the growing dusk of the sky leaving no shadow, the drivers at rush hour, their drivers eager to get home, speeding past him so quickly that surely they have no opportunity to register his presence. Under his red ball cap, his face is tear-streaked, his mouth in a frown, his eyes unfocused. A plan hatches in his mind. He waits for a break in the traffic and crosses the street, then walks backward for a time with quick glances behind to secure his way. "Do it," he tells himself. "Just do it." And he does. He thrusts his right thumb out, tips the brim of his hat backward so drivers can see his eyes. "Let people see your eyes," his grandma always told him, "because that's the only way they can trust you." He brushes the sleeve of his shirt across his face, rearranges his expression, squares his shoulders, and walks toe to heel. Drivers look at him now. He realizes he has blown his cover and will need a taker fast. He adds supplication to his expression, adds urgency to his step, with more frequent glances behind to make sure he doesn't trip on something. He hopes nobody takes particular notice of his clothing. He imagines his father listening to the evening news. A father from the St. Thomas area reports that his 8-year-old son Danny went missing today. Police say he was last seen hitchhiking on Highway 45 going north. He is wearing jeans, a blue checked shirt, a red jacket, a red baseball cap, and a red knapsack. His father is offering an award. Red, for Pete's sake. Why hadn't he just added strobe lights to his getaway outfit? "Come on, come on," he thinks as the transports thunder past. He approaches a huge combination Esso station and restaurant, and to draw as little attention as possible from the people milling around, pivots on his heel and walks forward with purpose, the way a normal kid would walk if he knew where he was going. Safely past the station, he throws his thumb out again, but the smell of the grill at the restaurant pierces through the dust of the road, reminding him that he left in such a hurry he hadn't packed so much as a chocolate bar. A silver transport truck pauses in the exit lane at the mouth of the Esso station, now several meters back, waiting interminably to join traffic. Danny watches, hopeful. The truck moves slowly into the northbound lane, then steers hard right onto the shoulder, moving forward until the full length of the truck is lined up on the wide gravel strip. The lights flash once, twice, three times. Danny stops. "Is that for me?" He stands still, unsure. The lights flash again, and then a tall guy in a white t-shirt and a blue cap opens the driver's door and hangs on an angle outside the truck, his right hand gripping the inside frame of the door, his left hand held aloft in a question mark, palm to the sky. "You want a ride, kid?" the man yells. "Or are you just taking a walk to air your pants?" Danny walks forward, breaks into a small jog, using his left hand to support the weight of his knapsack as it scrapes along his spine. What a raving idiot to have packed so many books. Kid found crushed to death on the road from the weight of stolen library books in his knapsack. "Move it, kid! Come on!" the driver yells again, then drops back into his seat. As Danny approaches the truck, his head no more than a third of the height of the massive silver grill, the passenger door swings open. "Give me that pack," says the driver, one long tanned arm reaching out, two fingers extended. Danny uses both hands to hook the backpack on the fingers, then looks for something to grab onto. "Holy mackerel, man, what you got in there? Books, for crying out loud? Put your hand here," and the driver points at a short metal handrail, "and put your left foot there," pointing at a scuffed rubber tread between road and lower doorframe. The smell of hot diesel fills his nose, the growl of the truck devouring conversation. Danny stumbles his way into the cab with the help of the driver, who grabs him under the arm and bodily lifts him into the passenger seat, not bothering to clear away the used Kleenexes and faded paper that cover it. "Thanks," says Danny, embarrassed. "Put your seatbelt on," replies the driver. He slams his door shut and leans forward, stares into his side mirror, grasps the stick shift as if it were a baseball, and revs the engine as he re-enters traffic. The gears grind and clank as if they are broken, as if someone were shaking a massive rusty chain from a ship's anchor in a metal can. Black smoke blooms through the open windows. Danny sits frozen in his king's seat, looking down at his familiar world, thinking about dropping back into safety while he still can, scoping out the whereabouts of his backpack, which he can no longer see.
Thank you, Heidi. I hope nothing bad happens to that little boy, but I guess that's what stories are all about. Anyway, thank you for joining us today.
My pleasure.
And thank you, too, to our listeners for tuning in today. If you have any comments or suggestions for us, or the name of somebody you think could be interviewed on this program, please contact us by email at wordonthehills@gmail.com. Thanks once again for tuning in, and we hope you'll join us again next week.